Hello and welcome to the Cookbook Circle podcast. I'm Victoria.
And I'm Hannah.
And simply put, we review cookbooks. We take one book for each episode and both cook a couple of dishes, then discuss what we liked, more likely what we didn't like, and give it a rating out of 5. Like all the best recipes, it's pretty simple.
And if you love what we do, we're now on Patreon. This means if you'd like to support us, your subscription will help cover the podcast costs from the books themselves, the ingredients of what we cook, and in return you'll get some fun stuff. To find out more, visit our website, thecookbookcircle.com, or you can find the link in our show notes. Thanks, friends. Now for the podcast. Morning, Victoria.
Good morning, and what a morning.
What day is it, Vic?
It is Wednesday. And Hannah, what day does our podcast come out?
Thursday. Are we having fun with technology? Yes, yes, yes.
Yes. Is this the second time we've recorded this podcast?
Yes. I think everyone needs to picture that they're in like a slightly drafty, you know, venue where they're watching us do this live. Because we're not going to have time to edit it. But we didn't want to put something out late. Or again.
Yeah.
Did that quite recently. So you're getting a raw cookbook circle. The only raw ingredient you'll find on this podcast.
That's not true. Maybe we should do a raw cookbook. No, we shouldn't.
I don't want to do that. It's very like mid-2000s Sex and the City, Samantha's latest.
We'll just buy a dehydrator and that's how we'll warm things.
Gross. I've been watching lots of MasterChef the Professionals, by the way, and there's an alarming number of people who can't cook a pork chop on there, and it's completely raw in the middle. So if you want to feel better about yourself, maybe have a watch of that.
I love to feel better about myself by, you know, watching other people's downfall, so that is... Maybe I will.
What I have been thinking about recently is it's alarmingly close to Christmas. Have you started your Christmas shopping, by the way? Oh god. She's got the bells out.
Am I Christmas shopping? Absolutely not. No.
It's really scary. I know it's like 25 days away, but why does everybody else have it done? I don't understand. What's wrong with them? What happened to like a Christmas Eve dash around the shops?
I don't even like, I feel like, you know, the people in my life that need presents, like, they change a lot. Also,
like me.
A lot of the people in my life, including my son, have December birthdays. Ugh. So it's not just one present I have to think about. It's at least two. So,
gross.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I was thinking about foodie gifts and what some good foodie gifts are if people are looking for inspiration. I think one of my top ones has to be a microplane, Zester.
That is a
really good gift.
Do you know what I learnt the other day?
Well, do tell.
I think about microplanes. Well, actually, I learnt it because I was reading the next book we're doing after this.
Yeah.
Microplane is a brand,
mm-hmm.
not a. I didn't know that. I thought microplane was a type of equipment, but actually, it's a feeling. Brand of grater. Yeah, I thought it was an emotion.
The emotion when you just zest something and it just goes straight through to the pith in one swipe. Yeah, it's a brand. But, you know, every day's a school day.
Isn't it? That is a good present.
And another one that you actually got me recently was a Nordic Ware tin. They're good tins. They're not cheap. Thanks, Victoria. But the one Vic got me was like a braided kind of loaf tin. So things like banana bread or like, you know, any kind of lemon loaf or whatever that you want to do, it's going to look really pretty when it comes out of there. And I think what you're actually paying for in a Nordic Ware tin is the ability to clean it quite easily and not be like, you know, when shit gets stuck in like the little ridges, that drives me absolutely fucking nuts.
Yeah. And it's not going to rust.
No, not like me. So, mostly composed of metal. Yeah, I think those ones are really... And you're just never going to buy that for yourself, are you? Like a Nordic ware tin. So I think that that's a really good one. Nigella has a beautiful
one. It's also...
Nigella has the most beautiful one. It looks like a little, like, winter castle thing. I've seen it in one of her books.
Yes.
Oh, hook it up.
It's one of those ones that you would never buy for yourself, and you wouldn't want someone to buy for you because you're going to use it once a year.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's, like, 40 quid, 50 quid.
Yeah, yeah.
But they are beautiful. They are. I just browse them on various websites because they're lovely.
Yeah, they are. What's the best foodie gift you've ever got?
Well, you actually bought me something that I use an awful lot, and I think this is a good idea for foodie friends. You bought me a couple of years ago a Japanese fruit knife.
Yes, that's right.
It's like a foldable
Japanese
knife.
Fruit needs.
All my Japanese fruit. Also, talk about Japanese fruit. Asian pears. I love them. Can't get them in this country and it drives me crazy.
What's the difference between a pear and an Asian pear?
I don't like normal pears, but I like Asian pears.
That's like everything for you, though. You don't like books, but you like Asian books. You don't like...
They're like a cross between an apple and a pear, basically. They're crunchier, they're crispier.
Right.
Less kind of soggy. Anyway, but that knife is so good. I use it not just for fruit, for onions and everything. It's so lovely. And I don't think it was... Because knives can be expensive, right? I don't think it was like really expensive.
No, it was not.
I love it.
I think I give... Yeah, I think where did knives, I got that in Kitchen Provisions. Didn't I?
Love Kitchen Provisions. If you're in London or in the UK, go to the Kitchen Provisions website and shop. They have two in London and they're just beautiful. They're just don't have to buy anything. But they do have beautiful pottery, don't they, that they don't have online in the shop.
Yes, that's right. It's just a great shop. And they have like lots of like little like stocking filler style things like mandolins and stuff like that. Which mandolin would be another great gift as long as you have the finger guard thing. Because you don't want to give
I would like a mandolin if anybody's thinking about a Christmas present for me. I don't have one and I could do with one.
You could do that 24-hour potato or whatever it is that Poppy Cooks makes. She uses a mandolin for that. I think a dough scraper is another good one. Another good gift. And on this Christmas... I was just going to say this Christmas I'm asking my family for the Aldi stand mixer thing that comes in pink.
Yes.
Actually, I think the pink is gone. It's 50 quid and the reviews are really good and it has all the little attachments and I don't have a stand mixer. And just think of the world that it will open for me. I can make brioche.
Oh, it'll open up, you know, great world. And also for me when I visit because you'll make... cakes and bread and I'll be able to eat them.
Anyway,
I also think this is my last Christmas gift idea, silicone baking mats.
Yes, they are good.
If you have a baker in your life, it's good. They obviously reusable. They're
great. Brilliant.
I love them.
The Silpat brand I particularly like. They're kind of like a breathably kind of silicon. I think we used them in baking school. I don't know if I mentioned that, but I went to pastry school, but you know.
Did you go to pastry school?
Yeah. here's that cordon bleu bell klaxon. But we're not here to talk about cordon bleu. Put your bells away.
Never. No, we're not here to talk about Christmas. Unfortunately, although I could talk about it all day. I picked up yesterday just to, you know, divert from what we're actually supposed to be talking about, Christmas at the River Cottage, the book from the library.
Ooh.
Because they had it and I couldn't resist.
Hugh Fearnley Whittingstall?
Is that he hasn't written it, it's Lucy someone.
Oh, I thought he was the River Cottage
but
man.
He's done the foreword, obviously.
Right.
it's wanky as fuck. I've looked through it yesterday. It's all like, you know, how to make a wreath and how to... Anyway.
Oh,
anyway,
right. That kind of...
Yeah, there is recipes in there, but it's not all recipes.
Is it like, you know, get your wellies on and go out and forage for some, I don't know, tiny little berry that you can put in one biscuit and feel yeah, wholesome.
Grow your own produce, yeah, you know.
Fuck that shit.
Too late for that, mate. Christmas in 3 weeks.
It's too late. I don't think that's what we're here to talk about, though. Once again, no, we need to get back on track. Talking about...
Anna Jones!
Anna Jones! Anna J. Miss Jones. AJ. Mia, Mrs. Jones. Mia. I don't know if she is Mrs. Ms. Ms. Jones.
Ms. Anna Jones, a force of nature that kind of passed me by as an artiste.
I remember when everything was all about her. You know, there was I remember when back in the day, where it seemed like every Instagram post was about kind of some healthy recipe that she had put out into the world. And yeah, like did she have a column in The Guardian and stuff like that, and she's still very, you know, present in our lives, but there was definitely a period when her presence was everywhere and welcomed.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's definitely whenever I think of her, I think of my friend Clara, who we love.
We do.
You know.
Okay.
Hi, Clara. And I for some reason, I feel like Clara loved her or made a lot of recipes from her. And those two people are in my head together. I feel like they would also get along. I've not met Anna Jones, but I have met Clara, and I've read these books, and I feel like they would get along. So, Anna, if you're listening, reach out to my friend Clara, who has an Instagram called Ideas for Art.
Does Clara like, you know, vegetables? She
is a vegetarian, yeah.
Okay, there you go. You just lump us all together in your mind, do you? Is it all us green folk?
Yeah. Yeah. My favorite Clara story. We're really going.
An ode to Clara.
This is actually the Clara. was that? So I had as you all know. Well, I don't know. I got married at Hawksmoor, the steak restaurant. That was where my reception was for my wedding.
You didn't actually get married in the restaurant.
No, but you can.
Can you? Just putting steaks on your fingers instead of a wedding ring. An onion ring on each finger.
And Clara had not... She'd been a vegetarian for a while. But anyway, she said, like, right, I can't not go to Hawksmoor and eat steak. So she was like, I'm going to be a vegetarian, I'm going to eat steak at your wedding.
Right.
And I was like, fine. So she's on the thing to get steak. Absolutely fine. That sounds great. Something I would do.
Yeah.
And then like about a week before the wedding, she texts me. She's like, I can't do it. I can't do it. Can I have the fish or something? I was like, yeah, that's fine. And
I love that it's been tormenting her in the run up to your wedding. It was obviously just like really on her mind. Yeah, I've come to close to those moments before when I don't know, I think we were meant to go to Bologna before COVID hit, and my sister Earth, who's also veggie, was talking about eating mortadella, which is just like the least appealing of the meats to me. Like, I don't get it.
I think so, yeah.
And it's like, do you get Billy Roll here?
Billy Bear, yeah.
The like spammy stuff, it looks like that. I know it's a lot more highbrow than that. And she kept talking about how she was going to eat that on holiday. And I was thinking, no, but like there's definitely some like prosciutto or something that I would have happily eaten in Bologna. But then I think I would just chicken. When it actually comes to physically putting the thing in your mouth, I don't think I'd be able to do it. It's too much.
Do you think you'd be able to go to Bologna though and not have like just a bite of like a lasagna or like a... You know, ragu. Yeah.
I think mince is like for me the least appealing. In the thing I miss the most is, you know, like maybe like a really good fried chicken or like a duck. Yeah, I've said this before. Duck is the thing, man. Anyway, sorry.
Anyway, Anna Jones. Should I tell you a little bit about Anna Jones?
Yes, please. Just
apart from that, she would get on with my friend Clara.
Just a little bit. No, that's it. That's the bio. The thing about Anna is, I just think she'd really get on with Clara. Anyway, on to the book.
So, she is an author, a chef, a food stylist. She's a woman of many talents. So, I couldn't quite find out what she did before she was a chef. But I did find out that she was unhappy in her day job, whatever that was. And I guess she enjoyed cooking. She liked cooking. This is back in the day. And she decided to apply to Jamie Oliver. Ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding.
Jamie Oliver's 15 program. And if you know anything about me, you know I don't love Jamie Oliver, but I do appreciate his 15 program, where he would take young people who are generally from underrepresented backgrounds in the food industry, hospitality industry, and train them up as chefs in his 15 restaurant. So Anna Jones got into that and went through that for a couple of years, which is great. She loved it. Jamie Oliver took a shine to her, and she was one of his faves, apparently. She would go to his house in Essex and cook for him and his wife and the kids, which is interesting.
Buddy Bear.
So after she finished...
Bashy Bosh.
Buddy, Flower, Bob. Petal, Daisy, Poppy. Yeah, all of them. So after she finished that, she staged around in Europe, in Italy, and... possibly in France, I read, but she didn't love that. She wasn't like, she decided that, I guess, Michelin star, you know, proper chefy, you know, brigade style chefing was not for her.
I get it. I think Michelin stars one must be just so, so tough. I don't have the precision.
No, nor me. I'm not tidy enough. So she didn't love it. I guess it was just hard. She talks about like one night in Italy or something, the accommodation was like shared and some other lady kind of got into bed with her and she'd never met her before just because that was how they were supposed to sleep.
A shared accommodation reaches a whole new level when it's literally someone else crawling into your bed.
So exploitative, but that's for another day.
When you're charging like fucking 200 quid probably for like a side of broccoli and then you can't put your staff in. Oh, gross.
And all you're doing like as a, you know, as a stage is like, you know, adding garnish or something, not even do...
That tinkle tinkle, anyway. By the way, is me pouring myself my third cup of coffee, everybody. Buckle
it
in.
It's 8 a.m. So she came back. She came back to the UK to work for at 15 again and work for Jamie Oliver because she was his babe. Not like that,
no.
As far as I'm aware. And at when she was back at 15, she decided. She got the opportunity to write some recipes for BBC Good Food magazine.
Oh, nice.
Which was cool, and she like really enjoyed that. So I guess she was like developing the recipes, writing them out, and then on the back of that, she wrote a kids' cookbook for Innocent. You know, the smoothie company.
Oh yeah, I love Innocent. Great on social media.
They're brilliant. Right. Yeah, they're like, yeah, their voice is really good. So she wrote a kids' cookbook for them, and then an editor contacted her and was like, "I love your recipes. You should write a cookbook."
Oh, we're waiting for that call any day now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Maybe we just need to write something down instead of we just talk all the time.
Maybe you have waiting for it, but I've had many.
Oh, okay. All right. Is this just telling me that you are, in fact, Anna Jones? That is your play. What is it called?
Surprise, bitches. But during this time, she had decided to... go veggie, which was not she said, I read a thing that said that it was like at the height of like when going to St. John and like nose to tail eating, and you know, everyone was eating a lot of meat and eating, you know, very British St. John style cooking, and people would be like, oh, are you sure? And like, is that going to ruin your career? Because we were in that situation, and she was like, no, it just, it makes sense to me not to eat meat. And so, yeah, but then obviously it's done wonders for her because she has obviously made a career out of it. So all of her books are vegetarian. So she released A Modern Way to Eat,
which first, I'm going to be talking about.
Which Hannah is going to be talking about. That was in 2014. And then the year after, she released A Modern Way to Cook.
Which nobody's going to be talking about.
Nobody's going to be talking... Well, someone might. Maybe Clara.
Maybe Clara. Doug's on hand here as well if we need any backup.
And then she did The Modern Cook's Year. So like a seasonal, you know, talking about the... obviously the year, and that won the Observer Food Monthly's best new cookbook of the year in 2017.
Oh, a bit like our pal Georgina H.
Yeah, Georgina from we just Anna J, Georgina H.
Yeah, we're all friends here. I wonder if that's a bit like Kitchen Diaries then, that Modern Cook's Year. Does it kind of go through the season or whatever?
I bet it's similar. Yeah,
nice.
And then in 2021, she released the one I'm going to be talking about, which is called One Pot Pan Planet.
One PPP.
PPP. PPPPP. Which is a one-pan cookbook, all vegetarian, and very heavily skewed on sustainability, seasonal eating, British food, like British, what's available in the UK.
Yeah.
Because that's where she lives. So, yeah. And how to just kind of be more sustainable. So that is her. And I feel like, apart from thinking about Clara, and we talked about this, I think, before I got the book.
Clara, you better listen to this episode, mate, after we've got the seventh shout out.
Our guest next week. So what I was surprised about my book, one, I'll talk about it in detail later, but was that the lack of lemons? I feel like Anna Jones and lemons are always talked about in the same sentence. Yes. Where she puts lemons in everything.
They're everywhere in this book, like literally everywhere.
Yeah, and I read another article with her that said that she was trying to make lemon the third seasoning after salt and pepper.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Just letting you all know. So I thought that was interesting.
Is. Why aren't they there, do you think? Is there like
they
a reason?
Aren't there because it's this like, yeah, it's all about sustainability.
Right, and right,
it's a food miles thing. She talks about it in the beginning. She's like, there is lemons. And, you know, she talks about there are some recipes with lemons, limes, things like coconut milk. But they are not grown really in the UK, and so
tragically no coconut milk is grown here.
Use them sparingly.
Yes, okay, fair. Well, that does not exist in this book. I think
no
lemon.
Do you want to talk about your book?
Yeah, I think there's lemon is named in the title of two of my recipes, not the third, but I'm pretty sure there was still lemon present. There was lemon on standby. So I have A Modern Way to Eat, which is over 200 satisfying everyday vegetarian recipes that will make you feel amazing. So there is this like weird bit in the beginning, not this weird bit. Jamie Oliver, your boy, writes the foreword, kind of saying how proud he is of her and stuff. But there's an intro that says that she'd like to make a few promises about the food in this book. It's indulgent and delicious. It will make you feel good and look good, which I just like. I don't think we would say now. I just don't think that's, no promises.
I feel like this is very of the Deliciously Ella time.
Yeah.
Right?
Cure yourself of, you know, everything with some, I don't know, beetroot or whatever, Swiss chard. It's like it'll leave you feeling light yet satisfied, lighten your footprint, quick and easy to make, won't cost the earth, impress your family and friends, and so on. So she just kind of talks for a couple of
promises,
pages.
Anna.
A lot of promises. things that I try to avoid. She, yeah, just talks about kind of why she became veggie and lighter footprint, and that she's, even though she's a cook for a living, she's also pretty impatient. She wants her dinner on the table in less than half an hour most nights. She says that they're easy on the pocket, which they are for the most part. There are some ingredients that I definitely think, especially of the time, right? When did you say this came out? Like 2014? You know, things like miso and stuff like that, I don't think would have been as widely available then. Certainly not outside of London. I think she lives in Hackney as well, right? Like peak hipster ingredients. But anyway, so it's quite a chunky book. And there's lots of, it's kind of divided into breakfast and like noodly kind of bits, salads, desserts, which are actually really interesting, and then kind of like dressings and like a homemade veg stock and stuff at the back. What's really nice is are these little guides that kind of break up the sections. And they are like how to build a pesto. So start with a nut base, about 50 grams. And then she names all the nuts that you could use. And then a herb or two. Are you laughing at nuts?
Nut base. I was going to say, is that our bad name of the week?
Nut base. a whole nut base. You know, add a herb, acid cake, oil, and an accent or flavour. And that stuff like that is just really useful. She has a seasonal guide, so spring, summer, autumn, winter, all the kind of fruit and veg there. Did you know the seasons before I shouted them out?
No, I didn't, actually. Thank you for letting me know.
The seasons of salt and pepper have been named, and now the other seasons have been named as well.
I'm used to living in the UK where there is exactly one season, and it's grey.
Also what I love is this vegetable underdogs page, and it's kind of the weird, she calls it the weird stuff, and it's veggies that you wouldn't necessarily know what to do with, so like turnips and swede and celeriac, and she says she lists what they're good with and how to do them in a salad, in a soup, then like a way to cook them, so either roast or mashed or in a coleslaw or like a quick pickle, and then like a tip at the end. I just think that's great.
Yeah, that is good. I mean, you know, I would describe the, all those vegetables she mentions as ugly shit that grows in the ground, right? Like, they're very unattractive vegetables.
It's brutal. There's definitely like a metaphor here for, you know, people. That the ugly people, the ugly ones have the most promise.
Look, I love a celeriac. I love a turnip. But, you know, they look, they're not appealing looks-wise.
Not appealing to peel either.
Ew.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I know. I don't really like, I think I've said it before, but Swedes, I always get them in my veg box and I never know what to do with them. You never know. But now I can tell you that you could, they're good with nutmeg, parsley, smoked paprika, caraway, blah, blah. You can mash them.
She loves smoked paprika.
Does she? I do too.
Yeah, me too.
Anyway. So
what did you
What did I cook? Don't you act all coy like I didn't eat one, or like I didn't make one of these for you.
I know, I ate one of Hannah's recipes.
From this book. Vic came to London last week and I was wondering what to make for dinner, and I saw this quick supper thing and decided to make that for her, and it was the avocado and lemon zest spaghetti, which just struck me as interesting. Avocado in, you know, anything. And she cooks it, so you do cook it in the pan. Basically, you just make your pasta, a spaghetti, with a good pinch of salt. Salty as the summer sea, and then you,
as we know,
in the, you cook it until perfectly al dente, and then in a separate frying pan you cook off some capers, quite a lot, 4 tablespoons, and garlic, and you sizzle gently, remove from the heat, and then you add in some lemon zest, of course. Then you add in to the pan herbs, so she says a bunch of fresh basil and a bunch of fresh parsley. She loves a bunch. Georgina loved a bunch too, didn't she? It's a vague vague little description, but anyway, we'll let them off the hook. And then you half and destone the avocados, of which there are two, and you kind of just crisscross cut them and scoop them into the pan as well. And so this is the step that I forgot. Before you drain the pasta, you're meant to hold back some pasta water. Oopsies, I forgot to do that. And then you drain the pasta and you put the pasta in the pan with all your green stuff and the cooking water, or not, and a good drizzle of olive oil. And then you add your salt, pepper, lemon juice again. And then you serve it. I think I have a slight problem with the seasoning methods in this book. It's often like right towards the end. And
yes, I agree. Another one, same with that mine.
It's a shame. Samin Nosrat taught us that, you know, when you season is important, you're meant to season as you go. But yeah, and sometimes it's just in one of the other recipes that there was just not any seasoning, and it definitely needed it. And I mean, we know to season, right? But it's just like, I think you should prompt people to do it at the right time. But anyway,
yes.
This recipe, I did like it. I liked the capers a lot in it. Quite punchy. But I think I have like fundamentally a problem with pastas that don't... It's not a sauce that like coats all the pasta. When it's just like things around the pasta. Things like mingling around it. I don't know. It was nice though.
It was really nice. I have thought about it a lot since I ate it, you know. And I told Stephen about it, and I was going to get you to text me the recipe because I was like, oh, I was thinking about, like, you know, you just want something like that sometimes, like a weeknight.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you just want to eat like a pasta like that. And yeah, I will take the recipe from you, and I will probably make it because I thinking back on it, I really liked it.
Oh. How nice. The gift of time has served this well.
Hindsight.
That's another foodie gift for Christmas. For when you're poor in a cost of living crisis.
I liked it. I think that would never feature in this book that I'm doing because it's got avocados and lemons.
Yeah.
But, and I imagine, like, your avocados are important, you know, as ever with avocados, you've got to get the right star. But yeah, I liked it, but
it was probably weird for me to cook for you in November, but, you know, I could get all the, ingredients.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we both went back for a second bowl, which is testament to it, and...
Yes.
Yeah, it was a Monday night, right?
Wasn't it? It would feed a family.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was...
It was great.
A family of Hannah and I.
We eat like a family. So that was one, which I did like. I think I would probably make that again, like you said. Weeknight. And that's the thing with this, like, this whole book is it's a lot of, like, great, quick weeknight stuff. A bit similar to kind of Rook Meanie Eye or whatever. Just good everyday recipes. The next thing I made was the pan dress noodles with crunchy cabbage and crispy tofu. Crunchy, crispy. So this is meant... You need a couple of pans on the go for this one. This is not a one pan planet pop. But she says to use a bunch of purple sprouting broccoli. Which I can never find that. Somebody just tell me where... I just don't know. But she says to use another...
It's one of those things that probably comes out in the shops for like 4 days a year.
Yeah, exactly.
And it costs £8.
But, you know, must be fun. Any purple veg is always a novelty. Or other green veg. So I used green beans. And then, so you cook them first in boiling water. Not too long, so it's not all mushy. And then you remove that, you keep the water on the heat, and you drop in your noodles. They're soba noodles, i.e. buckwheat. And you cook them for like 6 to 8 minutes. And then you drain them, run cold water over them to stop them sticking. And then you shred some cabbage. It's meant to be Can you tell I just played fast and loose with the ingredients on this one? It's meant to be a red cabbage, but I used a white one. And you put that in a bowl with salt, rice vinegar, maple syrup, and you scrunch it all together. I didn't use maple syrup. I used honey. You put it to one side so that it's kind of like pickling on the side while you do the rest. And then in a pan, you cook the tofu. She says to use smoked tofu. Because she just, I think, just likes the flavour. Why are you laughing at smoked tofu?
I'm just laughing at, you know, how many modifications you made in this recipe.
I can't be asked buying, like, a whole thing of maple syrup just to use 2 tablespoons of it or whatever.
Maple syrup was incredibly expensive.
Yeah, and there was no red cabbages, and there was no purple. But, you know, I think Anna would approve. I think she would want me to be agile and versatile and, you know, free. So you fry the tofu till it's crispy, and then you toss in some sesame seeds to coat that, and then you put a little oil in the pan and you add in spring onions, cook them for a few minutes. You take the tofu out before you do that, sorry. And then you put in the spring onions and then some vinegar and maple syrup alongside sesame oil, soy sauce and lemon juice. Ding, ding, ding. And you kind of cook that until it like thickens up to a nice kind of, you know, soupy, sweet, warm dressing. And then you put the noodles into that pan so that you stir them, cook them around in the dressing. And you then serve it with a handful of the pickled cabbage, half the tofu and your green beans or broccoli or whatever, and some sesame seeds. So it's just like a little kind of noodle bowl. And
yeah, lovely.
It was really nice. I think I'm not a big fan of buckwheat or of soba noodles. I think they're a bit stinky. Mm. I don't know, they're quite a strong flavour. I don't know if I love them.
I love them, but they do taste like the earth, you know, like they're very earthy.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm earthy enough for them. I'm too, you know, of another world.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah, I don't. But in itself, it was just like, you know, like a very like Instagrammable bowl of healthy, you know, shit. That's the kind of stuff that I think was everywhere when she first came out. But again, it was great. The only thing I would say is like a lot of pans on the go. But yeah, a nice little supper as well. I would definitely make that. And I think you can play around with that, right? Like the idea is that you have a noodle. What is wrong with you? Your mind's in the gutter this morning.
What? No, I was just saying that you can play around with it. Like, you did.
Oh, okay. My mind's in the gutter this morning.
Yeah.
I don't know what I took from that. But, you know, the kind of components of noodle, protein, pickled veg, and a nice dressing. Yeah, I think that's quite versatile, and I took it as such. And then the last thing that I made was the lemony lentil and crispy kale soup.
Just yawning. Don't worry about me.
Yeah. Well, Nick's failing. We've lost her. Are you guys still with us? Look alive!
I've only had one coffee. I don't have a cafetiere full.
A rookie mistake. Anyway.
Lentilies.
This is, it looks very lovely because it's very vibrant yellow because you use turmeric. And
did you use turmeric or did you use...
How dare you? I did use turmeric. No. It's a bit like a dal, this soup, which she does say. So basically you get a pan on the heat, add some oil, add a leek. Fry for a few minutes until it's softened, and then you add in these spices. So it's turmeric, which I use all of the correct spices: turmeric, ground cumin and black mustard seeds. And then you squeeze in the juice of a lemon, of course.
Oh yeah.
And you stir around after the spices have cooked for a little bit, and then you stir around the juice of the lemon to lift all the spices from the bottom of the pan. And you add in some lentils, then 1.5 liters of water, and they're split red lentils, 1.5 litres of water and a stock cube, and you let that all kind of bubble away for 20 to 35 minutes until the lentils are cooked and the soup has thickened. Then she says you can blitz it to a thin dal consistency, which I did with like a stick blender, and then you squeeze in the juice of the remaining 2 lemons. That's 2 whole lemon juices. 2 whole juices. Tasting as you go to make sure it doesn't get too lemony. I don't know. I don't know what is too lemony, but I put in the juice of two. And then just before you serve the soup, you saute the kale in a little olive oil until it slightly softens but begins to crisp at the edges. And that's quite a fun little garnish. So then you just put your soup into the bowls. You top it with some yogurt. This is optional. Stirred with a little sea salt. And the kale. And it looks very lovely because it's, yeah, the nice yellow soup, the green kale. It looks very healthy.
Yeah, sounds very, like, warming.
Yes, it was great. It was very warming. And it was very, yeah, dal-like, obviously. But, you know, that's really filling and a really nice winter supper. I think the crispy kale was a nice addition. And the lemon really came through, obviously. I would never normally put lemon in a dal, but it was quite a nice addition. So, yeah, I feel like I've added to my arsenal of weeknight healthy suppers with this one.
Which I think she would be happy about, right?
I hope so, Anna. I hope I make you happy. But the things I would like to make are mostly in the dessert section. There's like a pistachio and elderflower cordial cake, which sounds great. Salted caramel crack brownies. God, I overused that crack word quite a lot that time, I think. Muscovado chocolate chip cookies that you turn into ice cream sandwiches.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Apple molasses cake with honey icing. A lot of good, good looking desserts in here. I think I will definitely use this again. I think it's quite a handy little guide to to seasonality. But yeah, that's a modern way to eat. What about
cool
one PPP?
Me.
A sailor went
one
to
PPP. One pot
plan.
No, one pot pan planet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it wrong every time. So, this book, I will storm through this because we are storming through. this book is... It's obviously based on the pot. It's all one pot stuff.
Nice.
One pot. Well, she splits them into, like, pot, tray, pan. There are some desserts in there. So, there's some things you fry, some things you put in the oven, some, etc. It's entirely focused on being kind of more sustainable, less wasteful, eating locally, etc.
Nice.
Which is really nice. It's post pandemic, or she wrote it during the pandemic. So there's a couple of references to that, and it's so she splits it into pot, pan, tray, and quick.
Mm.
So a pot is on the stovetop, pan is in the oven. Pan is fried.
Yeah.
So it's like pancakes, things like that. Tray is in the oven and quick is all of them are still in there. And then it's interspersed with bits of, like, a bit like what you said, right? These like pages where she talks about how to live more sustainably, like how to reduce your plastic waste how to use like the whole vegetable or you know, things like that, which
nose
I really
to
like.
Tail then, vegetables.
Nose to tail vegetables.
Nice.
What I really like is that she has these pages where she focuses on a vegetable, like common ones, not like the weird ones that you had, but like carrots, peas, potatoes.
Yeah.
And then there's like 10, she calls like 10 ways with carrots.
Oh.
And they're like one paragraph little recipes that I guess if you've got a glut of carrots or they come in your veg box or whatever, you can make something fun, and there's not a whole recipe dedicated to it, but you know, it's just a way to think about carrots.
I love a way to think about carrots. I
think about them a lot. Jinx. But then the rest are lovely recipes with nice photos and very very Anna Jonesy, but like I said, less lemons, less kind of ingredients that have to travel, more seasonal things. So the first thing I made two things. The first thing I made is very similar, actually. Well, sounds kind of similar to your dal soup. It was baked dal with tamarind glazed sweet potato.
Baked dal.
Baked, yeah.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah. So it's very simple, but it is cool that it's baked. I've not baked a dal before, but it's very fun. So it's, you kind of, so what you do is you cook the onion, these onions, ginger and garlic. She absolutely loves a thumb-sized piece of ginger in my book. Every recipe has a thumb-sized piece of ginger.
But, I mean, I think that's a valid measurement tool. You know, I don't know.
Yes,
if someone says like an inch of ginger or whatever, I don't know what that is. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's good. This one calls for a large thumb-sized piece of ginger.
Right,
which is,
that would be my thumb then, as opposed to yours.
You said it, not me. So, yes, you add... You cook up some onions, ginger and garlic, soften those up. And then you add, like, the spices, which include 10 cardamom pods, which annoyingly you have to like crack open and then grind the seeds of the 10 cardamom pods. That's fucking annoying. Yeah. Got no time for that, really.
Blitz them. Blitz them in a coffee bean blender. That's the best tip I learned from my...
That is a good tip.
Chefy times. Coffee bean blender, another good gift for the Christmas folk.
Yeah. And also people who do drugs, right? That's what they...
Is it? Like
people use coffee blenders. Yeah. Anyway, I wouldn't know, obviously.
No, you wouldn't. But I'm just... I'm, what are they blending in there?
Like bean... weed, I think?
Oh, right, okay.
Not blending, but like grinding.
Gotcha.
Is it? I don't know.
Oh, no, I don't know.
Anyway, this is very off-piste. So, you've got your spices, which are, yes, cumin seeds, your cardamom, turmeric, chili flakes, and then you add lentils, red lentils, and various liquids into this. So, you've got a tin of tomatoes. You've got 450 mils of stock and a tin of coconut milk.
Oh, wow. Many things.
It's a lot of liquid.
Yeah.
So you kind of just put all that in together. Very simple. Very, you know, looks lovely, smells lovely. Mm. Again, like that nice, like, orangey vibe. And then you are supposed to, like, cut sweet potatoes, slice them about 5 millimetres thick. And this is why I need a mandolin, because I had the kind of sweet potatoes that are very long and thin, and cutting them into thin slices is incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
And maybe I did cut my finger, but we don't talk about that.
Not and so then you sweet lay potato those... now.
Exactly. Hope you like my blood in your dal. So you lay those on the top, you season them, which is the first seasoning that comes up in this recipe.
Right.
You season them and then you lay them on top of your dal as it's like simmering away on the stovetop.
Right.
And you brush the top with tamarind paste.
Oh.
So it's got this like, it's like a pie. It's got this like lid. Yes. Of tamarindy sweet potatoes, and then it goes into the oven for like 30 to 40 minutes, and it bakes until like the dal is much more kind of thick.
Yeah.
And you've got like a crispy top.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, looks great. Yeah. As it's cooking. I didn't slice my sweet potatoes thin enough, and probably didn't add enough tamarind paste to them, and so they weren't crispy enough as I would have liked them.
Right.
But they were still nice. They were still cooked and nice.
Yeah, yeah.
But in her picture, they're very kind of like, they're curled up at the ends and stuff like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, probably the like contrast in the texture of like the crispy and the soft would be nice.
Yes, gotcha. Exactly. It was nice. It was good. It was a dal.
Mm.
It's got those classic kind of warming flavours. I like the sweet potato top, but I love sweet potatoes, so I think I would have liked it no matter what. I feel like I said, I could have put more tamarind in, because I like that. Like, it smells so nice and it tastes lovely, but I feel like it didn't come through enough.
Yeah.
But maybe, again, that was my fault.
It's all your fault.
Yeah, I added some hot sauce to it, because even though it has chilli in it, I was like, it needs a bit of a kick for me. But I think I'm just on a bit of a hot sauce grind at the moment.
Hot sauce grind is our brand name of the week. But I also added a lot of hot sauce to that noodle, the cabbagey noodle thing. Because it was just, that was the one thing that was missing was the heat. There wasn't any chili or anything in there. So I lashed on some.
And you need that.
Yeah, you do.
We're hot sauce girlies. What can we say?
Hot sauce girls. That sounds good.
It was nice. It was it reminded me very much of the ottolenghi dal that I made for the first ever podcast of this.
Yes.
And that I made for a supper club.
Yeah.
Very, very similar to that, flavour and texture and everything wise. Which, you know, that's a hit.
Yeah, true. I mean, how much variation is there in dals really anyway? It's often a dal.
But I liked it. I probably would make some kind of variation again, like of it again. But I liked the bait. I liked that it was baked. You kind of just left it in the oven.
Yeah.
And it did its thing and kind of, you know, cooked all the lentils and stuff, which was good. And, you know, having a little part. It would be good to serve as like a
centerpiece kind of thing. Yeah.
Easy, cheap centerpiece for your veggie friends.
Nice. Clara?
Clara would love it. Clara, when I see you next, I'll make this video. And then the second thing I made was possibly a little left field for me. I don't know what you think. It was aubergine and peanut stew with pink onions.
Ooh, I love a peanut.
We love a peanut.
That is a bit left field for you, actually, I think.
A stew is not something I would usually make.
Do you want to talk about your friend's stew for a bit now?
No. Shout out to you, Stew. You're
make
great. I don't think you listen to the podcast, but I think your wife, Toria, does. So, hi, Toria.
Sounds good, though. I'm intrigued.
Clara and Stew, my two friends who... have boats. Clara lives on a boat and Stu lived on a boat for a while. Yeah.
Wow, could never.
Wow, this is so annoying for everyone who doesn't know Clara. Because this is fun just talking like talking about these people that no one knows. I'm gonna tag Clara's Instagram on when we put this out because she has a lovely little art Instagram and you should all go follow her.
Anyway, back to stew.
God. Okay. So it is, you need 150 grams of unsalted red skinned peanuts, which I was worried that I wasn't going to find, but I found them fine.
Yeah.
In the kind of African section of my supermarket.
Nice.
That was good. And you soak those in 500 mils of boiling water for as long as, you know, until you make the stew. So I kind of did that in the afternoon. So that was fun. Aubergines, onions, coriander, smoked paprika, pepper, bay leaves, a small bunch of coriander.
There you go.
Bunch. I don't know what that means. No. You have to chop the stalks, but leave the leaves whole.
All right.
Tin of tomatoes, again, tomato puree, scotch bonnet, vegetable stock, and peanut butter, and then you make the pink onions, which we'll talk about. So the most annoying thing about this is she wants you to, so it's two aubergines,
yeah,
you have to chop them, and she wants you in your pan to dry fry them until they're charred, which
smoky,
real smoky, and long, because that takes a long time, and you know my pan needed a dishwasher tablet in it afterwards because you're just burning the bottom of your pan. So, yeah, that was weird, and I kind of, yeah, she wants them to be charred, so you do that.
Surely you could grill them either, right?
Yeah, I guess. She just wants them all to be charred.
Anyway.
You know, it's nice. Mum, is it? I don't know. So you do that, and then you add all your aubergine back, then you add some oil, and cook it a bit more, and then you add the onion, fry, and then it's the spices, which I didn't have to crack open any pods for this one, so that was good. Spices and coriander stalks, which I love. I do, you know, I feel I've really come around to coriander, but stalks in particular in cooking is really nice. And then chopped tomatoes and the tomato puree. So a tin of chopped tomatoes and 3 tablespoons of tomato puree. Ooh. I'm going to come back to this just to remember that.
Okay.
Remember how much tomato-y taste you're adding in there. Scotch bonnet and vegetable stock.
Oh, scotch bonnet.
And the peanuts, you kind of add them all in. And then you just kind of simmer it over a medium heat for 10 to 15 minutes until you have a thick sauce, until it's like a stew. It's just so it's on a stovetop. You don't have to bake it or anything in the oven. So while you're doing that, you kind of make this the quick pickle, which she seems to love. So it's red onions, caster sugar, and red wine vinegar.
Nice.
Mixy, mixy, mixy. Add some of the scotch bonnet and some coriander.
Right.
Yeah.
Hot.
Nice. Which was all very well. I thought that it was too spicy, actually, at the end. But I went and ate it the next few days. The pickles, and it was actually fine. I think it was just too much fresh scotch bonnet.
Right, yeah.
And then when the stew is ready, you add in 3 tablespoons of peanut butter.
Ooh, love that.
Which is nice because it does add that peanutty taste. I feel like the peanuts on their own, they add that like bite.
Yes.
But the peanut butter really adds that like peanutty taste, which it needed, I think.
Yeah.
Then you drain the liquid from your pickled onions.
Okay.
And you add that in.
Oh.
A tablespoon at a time until she says until it is the right level of acidity.
Oof. Tart. I imagine that is tart.
Onion-y. And do you remember those tomatoes?
Yeah.
There's a lot of tomatoes. And no sugar.
Right, okay.
So you season it at the end. No seasoning till there at that point. Yeah, so
just
you're adding the peanut butter and the thing. So then you serve it all well and good with the things on top. And it was nice.
Yeah.
It was just I think the flavors for me weren't quite balanced, I think.
Right.
You could taste a lot of that acid, especially when you have the pink onions on top.
Yeah.
We served it with rice. You could taste the acidity of the pickle juice, mm-hmm. and you've got like those tomatoes, onions, the aubergine, lovely, like nice.
Yeah.
But I think it just needed something to offset all of that sourness.
Yeah. Which maybe the peanut butter is meant to do in theory, but doesn't quite carry it off. Do you think?
Yeah.
It's just not enough.
Yeah, and she doesn't say what kind of peanut butter, but you know. Only have the best in my house, obviously. So yeah, I liked it, and I tried it. I ate it a couple of days after, you know, because there's loads. Mm. And it didn't. I thought maybe it would enhance and the flip, but it was fine. I think something I felt at the end of doing this book is that I think I need a break from like 1 pan stuff. I feel like a lot of the 1 pan stuff that we've done for recent books is quite samey. Like the textures are the same, especially when you're looking at like not pastry stuff, but like, you know, the textures are very same. And I love a crunch. And I feel like I need that kind of different textures. And you don't really get that when you're just making like a stew. It's why I would never buy a slow cooker.
Yeah, I was just going to say. Mushy mush. Mushy mush.
Mm.
Mushy mush.
But I'm glad I made it. I like aubergines. I like peanuts. So I'm glad I did it. And it was interesting and a different thing to eat for dinner.
Yeah.
Not sure I'd make it again. But I liked it.
Interesting.
Fine.
Was there anything else in the book that kind of caught your eye that you thought you might want to make?
Yeah, quite a lot. The one thing I was torn between making and I maybe should have made instead was that she's got a sag-a-loo shepherd's pie.
Ooh, that's interesting.
But it's obviously not lamb, it's beans.
Oh.
So, and then with like a cauliflower, spinach and potato, you know, spiced top.
Ooh.
Which you bake in the oven. So I might go back and make that because it looks great.
That sounds nice. I'm down.
And then dessert's nice. There's like an almond butter brownie.
Ooh, like your favourite Brett cookie. Almond butter and dark
My favourite Brett cookie.
Brett. breakfast.
Oh, I love that cookie. They have the recipe on the website, and I should go and make those.
Should
we rate?
We should rate. Let's rate out of the things that we normally rate out of. They are usability and accessibility. That's one.
That's one.
My dog's licking me. Usability and accessibility. That's one. Ingredients used. How easy are they to find? Aesthetics. Is it pretty?
Yep.
Are there lots of photos? Vic likes a photo per recipe.
I do.
Veggie friendliness. Speaks for itself.
Yep.
And inspirability. And for each book or chef, we rate out of something different based on something that comes up again and again and again. So we're going to go for two slightly different ones based on these two different books. I'm going to rate out of lemons because, like we said, they're everywhere. And
you must eat so many lemons because you are so bitter.
And Vic's going to rate out of
thumb-sized pieces of ginger.
Yay. So for a modern way to eat, I am going to give usability and accessibility one lemon for sure because it's all very doable and quick and nice. For ingredients used, I'm going to give it half because I feel like there was some bits in, like purple sprouting broccoli or whatever. I know she says to sub in another veg, but, you know, you might be a bit lost as to what to sub in or, you know, those kind of, I don't know. There was definitely like miso and shit in there that might be a bit harder to get or, you know, saffron and stuff like that that I just don't think, you know, outside of your average Joe supermarket might not have. So that's a half. Aesthetics, I'm going to give it one. I think it looks nice. There's lots of photos. It's very like clean and white and colourful.
Yeah.
The photos are nice and colourful. Veggie friendliness, of course. I mean, there's no meat in here, so that gets a point. And inspirability, I'm just going to give it half. But I think, you know, that's not to do it a disservice. It's just that, you know, similar to the Rukmini Iyer, like I said, it's hard to be very inspired by a lot of weeknight suppers, right? They don't, but they still have a place and we still need them. Or you just might not be blown away. So for that reason, I'm giving it 4 out of 5 lemons. Over to you, Vic.
Great.
What you given?
So I...
One PPP.
Fairly similar. So it's one pot, pan, planet. Well, I'm going to get that right at some point. So usability and accessibility. That's one. That gets one thumb-sized piece of ginger. It's very... easy, straightforward.
Yeah.
You know, I had no trouble with anything. It's obviously like, £1 stuff, so it's great. Ingredients used, it gets another thumb-sized piece of ginger because it's all very available produce.
That's the point,
in
right?
In the UK. Yes, exactly. Aesthetics, I'm only giving it half because it does have lots of lovely pictures, but then it's also interspersed with these like moody pictures of her.
Oh, really?
Like in her house, like looking over her shoulder or whatever. Like, it's a bit like, I don't know what the design choice for that is,
well,
but like,
weird.
You know, I'm happy to see her face, but
yeah,
I don't need to, you know?
Yeah.
veggie friendly. Yeah. Obviously it's all vegetarian, mostly vegan, I think. And inspirability again, same as you, I'm giving it half because it's not to say that it's a bad book. I'm not inspired, but I don't think it's going to come. And like I said, and it might be about me rather than the book because I feel like I'm kind of done with that.
Yeah, mushy
for
mush.
Now with one pan cooking, with mushy mush, I'm a texture lady.
Texture queen.
So yeah, four thumb sized pieces of ginger out of five.
Samesies
from me.
Okay, nice.
Yeah.
They're good stock shelf pieces, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Next
up is one pan dessert. No, I don't eat it. Next.
It's a baking book.
It's another baking book. We and another Bon App person, right?
Oh, Bon App.
That's what the cool kids call it.
I am not a cool kid. I'll call it Bon Appetit.
Wow.
Yes, another Bon Appetit alum. No, she's still there? Don't know.
The much requested, I would say, this one has come from our nice listeners.
Incredibly highly requested. Claire Saffitz.
Oh, I thought we were just going to keep saying things about it, not actually naming her. Baking Queen sometimes, does a video on YouTube about how to make something. Yes, Claire Saffitz and Dessert Person is our next book.
Yes.
I'm excited.
It's a beautiful book. Yours arrived.
It has. The cover is lovely. It's kind of like a blood orange.
It's big, isn't it?
Yeah. It's there's a lot. I'm gonna have to get on it this weekend. Get doing some sweet stuff.
Me too.
It's always hard with the sweet stuff because you have to give a lot of it away, right? You just can't eat it all, sadly. But
do you have to?
Yeah, no, you don't have to. I want to get that small batch baked by Ed Kimber, by the way, for this exact reason. Don't have to give it away then. You can just make it.
I'm just going to buy you that.
Thanks.
For Christmas, I think.
Thank you. Cool. Can't wait for Claire. Hashtag
yes,
can't
I'm
wait
excited.
For Claire.
No, our third baking book of the season. So, yeah, and like I said, much requested. So, Claire, we're coming for you.
Clara, we're going to leave you behind.
Yeah, we're going to stop talking about you now.
Thank you for listening to our.
Thank you for listening. We're sorry about this weird live, unedited.
I don't think there's anything to be sorry for. This is us. This is the real us. The real Victoria. Peek behind the curtain.
Wow. You always say peek behind the curtain.
Do I? Anyway, thank you for listening. We love you.
We love you.
Bye. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Cookbook Circle. If you enjoyed it, please do subscribe and leave us a review as it helps others to find us. You can see how recipes from this episode turned out on our Instagram at Cookbook Circle. And if you make anything from the books we talk about, don't forget to tag us. See you next time. Bye!